Blog Talk Radio.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He has loosed his fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Of 100 circling camps, they have built for him an altar in the evening dews and damps. I can read his righteous sentence by the dim and flaring lamp. His face is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah.
It's the 239th anniversary of the United States Marine Corps. All this time, they've been protecting us so we could sleep quietly in our beds. And a lot of lives and a lot of Marines have been buried all over the world just so that you and I could get fat and stay happy. Thank you, Marine Corps, for all you do. The streets of heaven are guarded by the U.S. Marines. That's the way the songs go. A dirtbag, a communist, are writing an article in Communist Salon magazine, trash the nation's finest military, and he threw in the police. He is what I call a gate opener. He lets the enemy in while we sleep. The election has riled the cobra, and it is venom spitting time. Just when the rhinos are going back to sleep. They have written off the rest of the year while Obama dons his Hanoi Hilton suit. Did you see all the fools in their little Chinese costumes? Yeah. Who's ruling the world? and the head of China was in a business suit.
Yeah,
he must have laughed all night long. That's like when Obama made the Marines hold umbrellas for him and the president of Turkey while they were doing the deal to get the guys in Benghazi killed.
Yeah,
unbelievable. Yes, the rhinos have written off the rest of the year. While Obama dons his Hanoi Hilton suit and can't wait to send American troops to get Ebola or their throats cut in Iraq. Remember now, they have to get the first slice, and then you can respond.
Yeah.
Pray ISIS does not get their hands on one American, especially a woman. I wonder if the party of death to little children, that's in case you don't know which party that is. They used to be called Democrats. Now they're the Communist Party. 4,700 today they butchered in Democrat chop shops. Under Obamacare chop. And guess what? He has his CYA speech already written if we take casualties. Blame Hillary Clinton for this. She only kills in Benghazi. And who cares? C-A-I-R-S. So, let's have a tribute to the finest, the bravest. You know, there's a joke when we first went into Afghanistan. 400 Taliban lay in ambush for the Marines. And all of a sudden, all kinds of hell broke loose, and the smoke cleared, and there was only 300 Taliban. So they got ready for the second assault, and when the smoke cleared, there were only 200 Taliban. So the head of the Taliban, one of those guys that Obama released, he sent scouts to find out why they were taking so many casualties. And the scouts came running back, and they were shouting, go back, it's Marines, and there's two of them. Yeah, here's a little tribute. Bugler, Boots and Saddles. We'll be right back. was reading a chapter, I think it's 23, of Bill O'Reilly's book about Patton. And a couple of things I never realized, and I was never aware of, that the Russians tried to kill Patton and may have killed him. I haven't finished the book. I'm up to chapter 23. But I'm going to read you a couple of things. One of the things is that when Patton was flying from town to town, Polish Spitfires circled above his slow-moving plane. And one of the Spitfires came down and fired at Patton. And by the grace of God and the skill of Patton's pilot, he dove down so close to the ground that the Spitfire chasing him couldn't pull out in time and crashed. And then the other planes just moved on. And in O'Reilly's book, it sort of alleges that there were no Polish planes in the area. They believe it was the Russians because they had 1,000 of these Spitfires and they just put Polish markings on them. I think the Russians are very skillful at plane crashes. Okay, so I'm going to read you from page 269. Let me see here. The sun shines brightly over Germany as George Patton stands at attention. The fingertips of his right hand are firmly pressed to his polished helmet in salute. And we got a president that can't salute a flag. He holds his crotch. Dwight Eisenhower stands to his right, also saluting the American flag as it is raised over Berlin for the first time. President Harry Truman stands next to Patton's left with his hand over his heart. Next to him stands General Omar Bradley. Per a 1944 agreement between the Allies known as the London Protocol, Berlin is now the territory of the four occupying powers, U.S., Britain, Soviet Union, and France. Each nation governs a portion of the city. Russia still controls the area of Germany surrounding the city, making a Berlin a rubble-filled island. You who have not seen it, Patton said of the German capital, do not know what hell looks like. Patton was invited to Potsdam as a visitor to the conference and from there traveled by car with the president and his fellow generals to Berlin for the flag-burning ceremony. He has grown despondent in the past few months, undone by the fact that his fighting days are over. He plays squash and rides horses in the Bavarian countryside to keep himself in shape, and has even tried giving up cigars, but to no avail. By all outer appearances, he looks fit and healthy, but the reality is he is bored, spending his days attending ceremonies, reviewing troops, saluting the flag, and pinning medals on those wartime commendations that have finally come through. Without a war to fight, Patton is lost. Matters worse. The new president dislikes Patton. Back in 1918, the two men fought in the great battle of Meuse-Argonne, and Patton surely appreciated the precision artillery support provided by Truman's Battery D, even though he didn't know Truman personally. A colonel in those waning days of World War I, he outranked Captain Truman. But now the tables are turned. Don't see how a country can produce such men as Robert E. Lee, John J. Pershing, Eisenhower, and Bradley, Truman will write in his journal, and at the same time produce Custer's, Patton's, and MacArthur's. Truman's scathing opinion of the general is based solely on a first impression. He has not taken the time to get to know Patton, and the two will never engage in a meaningful discussion of any time. Truman just doesn't like him. The two men are polar opposites. Patton has swagger. Truman is humble. Patton is tall and athletic, a larger-than-life military hero. The diminutive, bespectacled Truman, on the other hand, looks like a bank clerk he once was. I think there's a story about Truman. He was rejected for military service because of his eyesight, and then he went and took the test again after he memorized the eye chart. I think that's a story about him. Patton was born into wealth and then married into even more money. Truman has been handed nothing in his life, nothing that is except the presidency. In Patton, Truman sees a braggart who struts around like a peacock in his showy uniform with his polished helmet and bloused riding pants. Truman dresses simply and avoids putting on airs, flashy style, despite the many pressing international obligations on his mind as the flag is being raised over Berlin. Truman takes the time to covertly count the number of stars adorning Patton's uniform and is appalled to find out they add up to 28. With the Second World War now at an end, remember those words. The president has little need for a general who believes it is his birthright to speak his mind, especially when it creates international discord. The official American policy toward the Germans is that anyone previously connected with Nazi Germany is ineligible to help the nation rebuild. The Russians agree. Russians are evil, man. This is a cornerstone of the Potsdam discussions, but Patton dissents. He speaks fearlessly about the lunacy of denazification, telling the press that it is no more possible for a man to be a civil servant in Germany and not have paid a lip service to Nazism than it is for a man to be a postmaster in America and not have paid at least lip service to the Democrat Party or the Republican Party when it is in power. Patton disagrees with official American policy, one disturbing element of which is that former German soldiers be used as forced labor in Russia, France, and the United Kingdom. These men, Patton feels, should be used to rebuild their own country. Germany's hospitals are no longer functional. Its sewer system doesn't work. The roads and bridges have been bombed, and there are millions of former POWs and displaced persons who will need shelter and food once winter comes. So with the words that put him directly at odds with the policy of his president, Patton tells a reporter that German labor is the solution to rebuilding Germany, whether or not someone was once a Nazi. He says, the entire German population was Nazi. You could not be and live there. They have to run the telephone exchange. He says, my soldiers are fighting men, and if I dismiss the sewer cleaners and the clerks, my soldiers will have to take over those jobs. They have to run the telephone exchanges, the power facilities, the streetcars, and that's what soldiers are not for. In his own way, Patton is still fighting battles, even as he quietly begins making plans to leave the military. He wages an ironic war in favor of the German people. The Germans are the only decent people left in Europe. It's a choice between them and the Russians, and I prefer the Germans. The Russians interpret this stance as an attempt to shield former SS members, perhaps to use them against Russians in a future war. They have lodged a formal complaint with Omar Bradley suggesting just that. That Waffen SS who surrendered to the Third Army in Czechoslovakia during the month of May have not shown up on the list of individuals turned over to the Russians for repatriation. Soviet spies now fill Bavaria, hunting these men down. The Russians win again. On June 13th, while Patton is on tour of America selling war bonds, his headquarters is informed by cable that the Third Army must immediately account for any German forces in its region, and at the same time, Army Chief of Staff George Marshall orders that Patton's phones be tapped, and even takes the extraordinary measure of requesting that a psychoanalyst from the Navy's Medical Corps observe one of the general's press conferences to see if he is suffering from a nervous breakdown. Marshall himself likes a Patton, but his top commander, Eisenhower, has written to him that Patton is a mentally unbalanced officer. Ever since the Knutsford incident in 1944, when Patton inadvertently slighted the Russians while speaking to a group of British women, Ike has come to believe that Patton suffers from seizures and bouts of dementia. This serious charge and Patton's habit of speaking out in favor of the Germans has convinced Marshall to investigate Patton's mental health. The powerful Wild Bill Donovan, this is the guy that formed the OSS, which is today's CIA. Wild Bill Donovan. This is very important. Pay attention to this. Also loads a Patton. Donovan and the OSS have been working with the Russians ever since he visited Moscow in December 1943. The American and Russian spy agencies are now exchanging information and helping one another on espionage projects within Germany, including spying on George Patton. In fact, OSS agent Duncan Lee, an Oxford graduate and descendant of Confederate General Robert E. Lee, is assigned to deliver to Donovan the monthly confidential report of the military governor in the U.S. occupation zone of Germany. That's Patton. This includes an OSS accounting of Patton's personal movements and wiretap recordings. While Bill Donovan's future is uncertain now that Franklin Roosevelt has died, Harry Truman keeps his distance. Donovan was very tight with Roosevelt. With the war over, the OSS may be dissolved, and they are also compromised by the communists. Donovan will do whatever it takes to keep his spy agency intact, including undermining the Truman administration's increasingly hard-line stance against the Russians by sharing secrets about Patton. So Donovan gave the Russians information on Patton. But Donovan himself is being deceived. None of this is in general history. The spy war in Germany between Russia and the United States is ratcheting up. That's right. We're scaling down, and the Russians are gearing up. It is, as American intelligence officer James Critchfield will let her write, the largest, most concentrated, and intense intelligence warfare in history. However, Donovan does little to stop the Russian influence within his own organization. Since the summer of 1944, his security office has made it known to Donovan that 47 OSS agents are either communists or Russian sympathizers. And Wild Bill also knows, that was his nickname, Wild Bill Donovan, also knows that Joseph Stalin has been planting Russian spies within the OSS since 1942. And the Russian spy system is greater today than ever before. What Donovan does not know, that's my opinion, does not know is that Duncan Lee, his executive secretary, and the man who knows all his secrets, is a traitor. Lee is working for the Russian spy agency NKVD as a double agent. Among invaluable nuggets of information Lee has provided the Soviets over the course of the war was advance warning of the D-Day landing date. The Russians knew the day we were going to hit Omaha and Normandy. And the exact location of the atomic research in Tennessee that the Russians would use such a prized asset, Lee, to gather information about George Patton speaks volumes about their eagerness to see him silenced. In May 1945, Donovan gains shocking information about Patton, of which the general himself is totally unaware. Stephen Skubick, a special agent in the U.S. Army Counterintelligence Corps, speaks fluent Ukrainian and is tasked with developing undercover sources of Slavic ethnicity to report to American intelligence. On May 16th, he met with Ukrainian nationalist leader Stepan Bandera, who will one day assist the Americans and British in spying on the Russians. Bandera specifically told Skubick that Soviet High Command has been ordered by Marshal Stalin to kill U.S. Army General George Patton. Stalin's reasons are simple. Patton defied Russian authority when he invaded Czechoslovakia back in May, during the waning days of the war. But rather than being shocked by Skubick's news, Donovan orders him to arrest Bandera so that he can be returned to the Russians, thereby silencing the man who was warning about an attempt on Patton's life. The OSS, Skubick will later write, with a great deal of understatement. But the investigation is not over for Stephen Skubick. A few weeks later, he meets with Professor Roman Smalstucky, an academic and former Ukrainian diplomat, who was on the verge of being expelled from Germany and sent back into Russian hands. Smalstucky informs Skubick that the NKVD will soon attempt to kill General George Patton. Stalin wants him dead. Finally, in the middle of the summer, Special Agent Skubick interviews yet another Ukrainian, General Pavlo Ashandruk, who fought with the Nazis in the waning days of the war and is now desperately trying to avoid being sent back to Russia. He offers the United States some vital intelligence that he hopes will allow him to remain in the American zone. Please tell General Patton to be on guard. He is at the top of the NKVD list to be killed. While Bill Donovan and Special Agent Skubick soon meet again, and once more Skubick tells him of the threats, but Donovan dismisses them, saying they are just a provocation. Back in Berlin, Patton stands at attention on this crisp morning, watching the stars and stripes hoisted over the city he once longed to conquer. Today, Patton is harboring a dangerous secret. Although American Undersecretary of War Robert Patterson proclaimed on May the 31st, 1945, listen to this, Patton is harboring a dangerous secret. Although American Undersecretary of War Robert Patterson proclaimed on May 31st, 1945, that all Allied POWs had been returned, Patton knows that a top-secret policy instituted by General George Marshall, then tacitly approved by Franklin Roosevelt and Harry Truman, effectively abandons all American and British POWs who fell into Russian hands at the end of the war. The Russians are using them as leverage in negotiations with the Allies to ensure that all Soviets who have fled to the West will be returned. And there was like a whole division of Russians that didn't want to go back, and we drugged them. I think they were in Fort Dix, New Jersey, and we drugged them and sent them back. Patton believes that the man to his left, President Truman, has allowed more than 20,000 American POWs to remain in Russian hands. As a military man, Patton will do whatever it takes to see these men released, even wage war. But he is conflicted because he understands that Truman's motivations for allowing these Americans to be held hostage is to ensure that the Russians join in the fight against the Japanese. and then once the war is over, join a new organization to be known as the UN, which is a waste, in order to ensure future world peace, which never happens. Patton is becoming more and more certain that the only way he can speak freely about these issues is to leave the military. Armed with top-secret knowledge and his usual defiant attitude, George Patton has made himself a target, and he knows it. A few weeks ago, before leaving his daughters in Washington, Patton said something that disturbed them greatly. "Well, I guess this is goodbye. I won't be seeing you again." Patton's daughters were shocked. "It's crazy," they protested. "The war is over." To which Patton mysteriously responded, "My luck has run out." If you look at the casualty list from World War II, missing in action, 77,000. That's the highest missing in action count of any war. And that when I said they all couldn't have been blown to bits by Russian, German artillery. And I'm sure that somewhere out there is a story about somebody that was American that ended up in a gulag. God help them and God bless them. Okay, going to give you a little Dixie. Okay, that was a little Dixie, and I was looking for another tune, but we're gonna have to find you another tune. Let's see what we got. Oh, here's a World War II tune.
We'll meet again. Don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. Again, don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
really sad. One of the things that came to mind, I read some of Patton's speeches, and in one of his speeches, he was addressing his men on one of his last speeches to the guys before they went home, and he reminded them that they have a political duty to protect the nation when they get home. And he didn't have much respect for lefties and weaklings. Yeah, and sneaks. And he said, and he says, there's things I would like to tell you, but I can't tell you now. I remember that in his speech. I'm thinking about this appointment that's Eric Holder's replacement, and I don't like it. It stinks. It's like making Marines carry umbrellas for the president. It's a put-down. It's a smack in the face of the American people. It's, here comes, you didn't learn your lesson, here comes some more extra race cards. And this Loretta Lynch is not the right person for the job. She is an apparatchik for the Communist Party, which is now the Democrat Party. And I submit to you that she was given the assignment to take out Michael Grimm, the conservative from Staten Island who's in the Congress. And they set him up. They set him up for labeling. Because the word indicted already means you're a criminal, especially when you have a communist media that keeps saying it all the time. And the day of the election, on ABC radio, 20 times they mentioned, as people were going to the polls, that Michael Grimm has been indicted. And Michael Grimm won anyway. You know why he won? His mother wrote everybody a letter saying what a good boy he was. How do you like that? You know what she said in the letter? He gets up early in the morning and he goes to work. Okay? So that was a plus right there. And she also said that he served in the U.S. Marine Corps in a combat zone in Iraq. And he was walking prisoners back to a holding area, and they all ended up in a minefield. And you might say he didn't use them to clear the minefield. They all got back safely. So he must have helped them, huh? And then he joined the FBI, and he became an undercover agent for the FBI. So there's two strikes against him right there. He serves his country in the military, and he serves his country in the FBI. Now, what else could they get on him? Oh, I know. He had a restaurant. So they got him on small business capitalism. And they say that he got caught embezzling money. And I joke, I say, yeah, they have him on video. He opened a register and he stole $20 of his own money. And the FBI has the proof. They have pictures of the 10, the 5, and 4 singles. And that's $20 in FBI talk. Imagine that, the FBI, they use the FBI to get an FBI agent. How is that? How do you feel as an FBI agent knowing the guy is clean and they want to get some dirt on him? How do you feel about that? The Secret Service is the one that gets me. They've ruined the Secret Service. The image of the Secret Service is verstogener. They got them all as party animals, leaving their guns and wallets laying around. And they were only doing what Obama was doing. Yeah. Unbelievable, man. So they've smeared the Secret Service. Now, if I'm a Secret Service agent and they say to me, you know, you've been destroyed by the president's people. You've been made to look bad. Now, be sure that you protect him if he takes fire. And the first thing I do is look at my $80 suit and say, I'm not getting any holes in this for this guy. I'm going to use him as a body shield. So Loretta Lynch is not the Department of Justice representative. We don't want to go from bad to unknown worse. And if the rhinos don't stop her, or go down swinging, Boehner and McConnell will become more of an enemy than Obama is, because they will have sold out. Were you surprised to hear what was going on behind Patton's back? Isn't that sad that Eisenhower was planning to be president way in advance of the end of the war, do you? Huh? Is there a good old boys club that you and I are not privy to, and neither was Patton? You know what his problem was, Patton? He loved his troops too much. They called them old blood and guts because they used to say, yeah, he's using them up. But you know what? You know when he died, when he was assassinated by the Russians and covered up by the Americans? Do you know where he was buried? He's buried with the men who fell before him in Belgium. That's where Patton is buried. He never came back to the USA. You don't think it was because he was disappointed and he'd rather be buried with heroes? We'll never know, will we? Okay, so here's a breaking story. World's largest solar plant seeks taxpayer bailout. You know, I do blogs. Sometimes I do very long ones. And I have a lot of talking points. And you may not agree with me. But please don't send me an email saying Caps is shouting. I mean, if that's all you can say about all the information that I've just laid on you, Caps is shouting. Yeah, Caps is shouting. And who made that rule? How brainwashed are you? Do you really believe Caps is shouting? Who told you that? Well, my professor, the one that looks like Stalin. After already receiving a controversial $1.6 billion construction loan. Remember when Obama laughed about the shovel-ready jobs and they had sunk in a couple of billion into it and they were all laughing that nobody got them? You know what you want to do? Go to YouTube and type in Reich, Robert Reich, R-A-I-S-C-H. Type in Robert Reich, big Democrat, no jobs for white construction workers. He called for no jobs for white construction workers. And you can hear him say it in his own words. Robert Reich, no jobs for white construction workers. After already receiving a controversial $1.6 billion construction loan, the wealthy investors of a California solar now want another $539 million in a federal grant to pay off their federal loan. This is an attempt by a very large cash-generating companies that have billions on their balance sheet to get a federal bailout. The taxpayer for their pet project, said Reason Foundation VP of Research Julian Morris. It's actually rather obscene. I believe that when California goes broke, the first state that the federal government is going to go to who has a good credit rating and pays their bills is Nebraska. Some farmer that gets up at 4 in the morning and works until he drops is going to have to cover all of the Hollywood apparatchiks. Terrible, man. It's really sad. So there's a solar plant that's not making it. Oh, by the way, the price of gas, Aline, in California, $3.60 a gallon. Now, the price of oil dropped to $20 a barrel. How come it's only down a few pennies? And everybody's going, oh, it's $2.69. I can't believe it's so low. No. 37 cents a gallon is low. Yeah, everybody should have a drill. You never can tell. Stick it in the ground. See if any black syrup comes up. Here's an article. This is from Virginia Tech. A student group loses funding because of their conservative views. And that's the story. They have conservative views. They're God and country people, and the college no longer sponsors, will allow them a leg up with the communists. That's Virginia Tech. You know, that's where that Oriental guy went crazy and gunned down a whole bunch of students. And they had a candles in the wind moment, but they didn't put armed guards in the back on the campus. And when the ROTC guys went to the arms room to get weapons to defend the rest of the students, they were told they couldn't have any. Yep. Minneapolis School District. Oh, that's a different one. They want to suspend. They have to go to headquarters to suspend any black or Hispanic student. Yep, but they could suspend the white kids. And the guy is commenting. He says, it is hard to believe that maybe black and Hispanic students may just commit 10 times more crime than whites. Where I come from, the majority of felons, murder, rob, and rape, are committed by these groups, non-white. Go to any prison and just ask them why they're in jail and you'll get your answer. I resent the fact that the communists have lumped Hispanics in with blacks, saying that both suffer the same discrimination. I don't believe that. I believe that Latinos are ladder climbers, and they will rise up, and they will improve themselves, and they will do good in this country. There is an element of people who will always be at the bottom of the ladder and choose to stay there for whatever reason. But Hispanics are entrepreneurial. The guy that's cutting your lawn tomorrow will be, the day after, he will be a construction contractor. It is really sad. Obama's moving on the internet. Do not let any party move on the internet. The internet has to stay free, and it has to be open communications, because one day when you wake up and Russian troops are directing traffic for Chinese tanks, you may want the internet to find out what's really going on instead of listening to the man on TV that says it's only a parade. And you don't think that can happen here? Yeah, you know who thought that too? The Romans. They thought they had it made. Hitler thought he was going to have a 1,000-year Reich, didn't he? Well, he was bad. We're good. What makes you think we're good? You know how many babies we killed today? 4,700 of our own American babies. Citizens. We killed 4,700 American citizens. Oh, those aren't American citizens. Those are fetuses. Oh, American citizen fetuses. And tomorrow we're going to kill another 4,700. And it won't take long to kill the equivalent of all the people on the border that are waiting to come in. What will it take us, 3 weeks? What's 21 days times 4,700? 100,000? Yeah, unbelievable. There's somebody commenting on Lynch, the lynch mob that Obama has put into the Department of Justice. She has a lot of splaining to do on her positions in regards to the IRS administrative law overriding congressional power, amnesty versus the voice of the people, voter fraud, Harry Reid shelving the people's voice of the House of Representatives for political collaboration with Obama, so Obama can say the Senate does nothing and therefore I declare administrative law. Harry Reid's a cattle rustler. Harry Reid's a bad guy. Let's see what we're going to do here. Come on. Got to do a tune for the people. Cancel. Let's see. The Ukrainians. That's a bad one. That's a sad one. You're watching Adolf Hitler in action all over again. You don't think that those are dissident Ukrainians that are resisting the government of the Ukraine, do you? You don't think maybe those are Russian communists? You don't think they're part of a task force that's already in place? Here's a little tone for the Ukrainians. It's called O Holy God. Okay, it's over. Walid Shubat, the voice of freedom in the Middle East, is calling John McCain a doofus because John McCain praised the rise of radical Islam. And now he wonders why he was cheering the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood, which got thrown out of Egypt. And now he wonders why radical Islam is on the rise. John McCain couldn't keep dope out of Arizona. I don't think he's my candidate for defending the United States against international communism and jihad. Couldn't keep dope out of his own state. For legal aliens out of his own state. And he's been there a long time. So, we will do a fast Unchained melody.
My job.
poll taken in Russia, 76% of the Russian people do not like Obama. And that, there used to be only a 12% didn't like him. He's done such a great job as president, and it's up to 76%. Terrible, man. Terrible. Okay, what else we got? We're going to say sayonara. Is it time to go? Please don't quit now. That's a guy that's all on his own. He's out there fighting the homosexual lobby. Everybody's afraid to be associated with him. He's out there all alone. What's that saying? First they came for the gypsies, and I wasn't a gypsy. Then they came for the Jews, and I wasn't a Jew. Then they came for me, and nobody cared. There is a video out there on YouTube. I'm trying to think of what the name is. It's an incident that happened on a New York subway and on the F train, where a bunch of girls were harassing a big dopey-looking guy, and they were making fun of his clothes because they weren't up to style. And a guy was videotaping it, you know, with his camera, with his cell phone. And the girl was in the guy's face. And the guy was tall. He could have been a basketball player. And the girl was in his face. And she was putting him down. And her girlfriends were all sitting there laughing. And there was one white guy that was sitting on the other side. He got up and left right away. He had previews of coming attractions. And the girl went after the guy with the camera, and she smacked the camera out of his hands. Then she went back to make more fun of the big guy. And he was wearing one of those Russian hats with the flaps down, and he had on a jacket with an 8-ball on the back. And she was making fun of his clothes. They went out in the 90s. And he was standing and smiling. And then she took a smack. Then he called her a bitch. And then she took a smack at him, and she knocked his hat off. And he slapped her. You could hear the slap at the next train station. He did an open hand slap on her face, and she flew 5 feet. And then another black guy jumped him, and he started beating up that guy. And then everybody's laughing. It was like everybody was having a good time. And some poor woman, she looked like she was maybe European or from a Latin American country. And she was sitting right where it all took place. And all she wanted to do was, she was praying that the train would get into the station. She was frozen. Luckily, nothing happened to her. But you got to see this, man. If you want to see what animals look like, this is it. This is it. This is under our new communist mayor who's legalizing weed on his own. Yeah, he's telling the cops to help the guys that they arrest to smoke it. Unbelievable. Okay, we're going out with a tune. Until we meet again, till then.
One day I know I'll be home again.
There was a story. I want to stay a couple minutes more. There's a story about a nun who kissed Elvis. And the nun's name is Dolores Hart. And that's not her name now, but she used to be an actress, and she was in a movie with Elvis Presley. And they said she was she was going to be another Grace Kelly. And she came from a broken home. Her mother and father were in acting. And when she was 3 years old, her parents broke up. And she was one of the most successful young actresses of the early 60s. She starred in 10 movies with directors like George Isacore, Michael Curtiz, co-starred with George Hamilton, Montgomery Clift, and Elvis Presley. She appeared on Broadway and starred in the classic Where the Boys Are. And then she walked away from Hollywood and her fiancé to become a nun, joining the Abbey of Regina Laudis in Connecticut, a community of contemplative Benedictine women dedicated to the praise of God through prayer and work. The nuns of the Abbey chant the Mass and full divine office each day, while expressing the traditional Benedictine commitment to manual work and scholarship through various contemporary media and professional disciplines. The mission to praise God at all times is symbolized by the lyre on the Abbey's crest and by our motto taken from the Book of Judith, "Let praise never cease." So they got a picture of her in the movie with Elvis, and she had a boyfriend, and the guy was crazy about her. And she spoke very warmly of Elvis. I was 18 and he was 20 when we first walked together in King Creole. He had so many fans that they had to stay inside the hotel. He would take out the Gideon Bible and ask her what she thought about different passages. After she decided to become a nun, he called her to tell her he supported her choice, and he continued to send greetings to her through a mutual friend who wrote to her regularly. I did not have an in-depth relationship with him. We were too young. He really wanted to be a good actor. He wanted to be like James Dean. But Colonel Parker wanted the moolah. I told her of my fondness for the movie Come to the Stable with Loretta Young and Celeste Holm as nuns. She told me that movie is inspired by a true story behind her order, and that Celeste Holm came to speak at the convent not long before she died. She studied with two of the greatest acting teachers of the 20th century, Uta Hagen and Sanford Meisner. Their advice to find the truth and be true to yourself was important for acting and for life. And the guy that was her fiancé, he came and visited her until he died. He never married. He used to visit her maybe once a year or something. That's a beautiful story. And it sure beats what we got now. It sure beats. Yeah. I'm not going to say it. All right. So, having said that, it's time that you learned Spanish, because we're not learning enough Spanish. So you can press 1 for Tico Tico.
Tico parli, tico tico parla, non se se via, non dormi che se non la. Chi fa se pari, si, chi fa se parla, come le vono, se così vede il galà. Qua vede un sombrero, le chiese viene a plati, non se va di se promena per di fa. Se sta molta chancro, li prende gomita, i ferre vengono le cipone la lambla. On dit tout, quando sono conferenze di corsere, chi fece la tratta di nuora venosera. E quando ci è passata con la maison, chi la vita sulle gratelle, l'alcalà e le fila. Tico tico se venne in collegate, se sono mai cose, non se va nelle sete. Il tuo gardete, forse anche se sombrero. Sembra cavallero, tico tico, tico tico parti, tico tico parla, non so se mio, non so più che se non là. Si fa se pari, si fa se parla, come le vuoi, non so così mi regala. Come del sombrero, le chiese viene a plate, con c'è mani se promena per si fa. Si sa muta, c'è un po' di tre de gomina, si ferre vedo le gipone la rambla. Si opera de corsè. Chi fede la torre de nuova per notero. I patacci e patacci sono le mison chi la vita sulle gradende l'alche lai di pia. Dico dico de venire di quelle canere. Di son mai cose sono scivale di tetere. I tuoi gardete voce a casa sombrero. Se te frega valero dico dico. Dico dico parli, dico dico parla. Non tutte via non tanto che te non la. Si fa se valisse, si fa se parla. Comi le bobo come si me regala. Coffie del sombrero, le chiuse piene a parla. Che sto scivale di te prone la petita. Se sta muta chanson, li frede gomina. Si frede venire di pomera la mano.
Have a nice night, folks.